Hello and welcome to the latest Pensions Expert podcast. My name is Nick Reeve and I'm a journalist with Rhotic Media and your host for this episode. The UK government is preparing to launch its first green gilt at the end of September or early October and is expecting strong demand. As ESG investing becomes embedded in pension fund portfolios, demand for green bonds is rising rapidly. $290 billion worth of green bonds was issued in 2020, according to the Climate Bonds Initiative. And this is projected to reach $500 billion by the end of this year. Now, despite these big numbers, it is still a nascent market with a lot of uncertainty about it, including around pricing and use of proceeds. Fortunately, to help us through these questions, we have two experts from the Netherlands, which has been a trailblazer on green bond issuance for the past few years. From Cardano, we have Rick Clerks, Senior Portfolio Manager, and from the Dutch Development Bank, FMO, we have Senior Treasury Officer, Arthur Leichraf. Since 2013, the FMO has issued more than £1.5 billion worth of green and sustainability-themed bonds aligned to sustainable development goals for decent work and economic growth, reduced inequalities and climate action, putting Arthur in a perfect place to explain what we can expect. Firstly, Rick, can you tell us how you think about the ESG issues in the credit market?
Well, we used to always look at risk and return for bonds where we invest in. And we started our first investment in a social bond in 2016. And at that time, it was really, it was a Dutch BNG. It's a housing corporation bond. And for us, it was a very logical thing to do because it's part of the, let's say, the risk analysis that you do anyway. But since 2016, it hasn't evolved a lot. Now, how people look at social bonds and green bonds, and it's become somewhat more of a separate pillar next to risk and return. And it's therefore also, I think rightly so, has gotten a lot more attention. But it does make it more difficult as a portfolio manager or as an investment manager to weigh these three pillars. And to what extent do you find one more important than the other? We find it still very challenging. And what is also not helping is that the market is still in development. The rules and regulations are not yet clear. We try to be at the forefront of these developments. But yeah, the market will definitely benefit from more clarity.
And turning to you, Arthur, from the perspective of an issuer, what's the advantage of issuing a green bond, a social bond or a sustainable bond?
So, as you know, we are the Dutch Development Bank based in the Netherlands. What we do is we provide long-term financing to the private sector in emerging markets to promote sustainable private sector growth as part of the Dutch Development Mandate. And what we did is that we actually used our strategy on the funding side as well. So we have incorporated into our funding strategy, which resulted in our sustainability bonds framework, under which we can issue green, social and sustainability bonds. What is the big advantage for us? Well, first of all, investor-based diversification. We really connect with investors who have similar values as FMO, and it extends basically our investor base from the traditional fixed income buyers. Secondly, with the issuance of these bonds, we contribute to development of the green and sustainability bond market. Finally, we have more funding options. We can do just a benchmark bond or a thematic bond. So it gives you more flexibility as a treasury.
And just to get a bit of an example of that, can you talk us through one of your green bond issuances?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, as to date, we have issued four euro transactions, 500 million each, two Swedish krona sustainability bonds and $1 green bond. Let me guide you through our last issue. So that was in March last year, 2020, where we raised a 7-year 500 million euro sustainability bond. We did do that when the COVID crisis started to unfold. Basically, we want to be there for our clients in case they need liquidity support from FMO. Yeah, that was a very successful transaction for us in terms of oversubscription. So it was four times oversubscribed. But we also extended our investor base a lot. So we've seen 70 investors in that transaction, of which 28 were new. Yeah, in terms of pricing, what I can say, because of the oversubscription, we started IPTs as at mid-swap plus 34. Yeah, we managed to print at mid-swap plus 31, so three basis points tightening, yeah, which was a lot for these times. But we also don't need to forget that it was an extreme situation also in the capital markets. But in the end, yeah, it was a very good transaction for us.
We like the fact that these issuance, there are other types of investors than bank treasuries or hedge funds and other investors that may be selling the bonds shortly thereafter, which is not ideal for an issuer, but also not for other investors. They would like to have the bond in stable hands, and generally sustainable investors are there a little bit more for the long term. You know, because Cardano is often in these issuance process regarded as a sustainable investor, we also get some higher allocations, for instance, for some deals.
Now, Otto was talking about pricing and demand there. Rick, I want to turn to you at this point, because there is quite often a premium attached to green bonds at the moment. So how do you interpret that?
Yeah, it's very relevant and topical. A few years ago, there was no premium. And then it was, I think, really about, as Arthur explained, issuers trying to tap new investor pools that were previously not attracted to a particular issuer. But what we see now is that the demand for these sustainable, whether they're green or social bonds, is ever increasing. So more and more institutional investors, pension funds, are interested in these bonds. And the supply is limited because the projects, social and green projects, are limited. With this ever-increasing demand and limited supply, you'll get a premium on these instruments. And this is something that, as an investor, you need to get comfortable with. There are a few things how we approach it. And one is in the Euro market, where we are active, there's a big issuer, which is the EU itself. So they have a large next generation EU program, 750 billion, of which they want to do a lot green. So that supply alleviates some of the pressure on the premium, and something that we would be looking to invest in. But there are other issuers, like in Germany, where they have a twin bond. And what that means is that they have two bonds exactly the same. One is green and one is not green. And there you can really clearly see what the premium is. There we are a little bit more careful. But for other issues where we can clearly see a distinction in terms of and the characteristics of the bond, maybe it's a longer dated bond. Typically, green projects are longer dated, so the bonds are longer dated, or it has a smaller size, or the investor base is in fact more sticky, so they hold on to the bonds longer. And these are also factors that we take into account when we assess a green premium. Yeah, by using new issuance, looking carefully at the characteristics of the bonds, we think we can manage the premium that we pay. But it's still something that also the end investor in the end has to be comfortable with.
Now, one issue that a lot of pension funds that are getting into this space are often concerned about is greenwashing. How do they know really that the bond does what it says it's going to do? So, Arthur, I wonder if you could address, how do we know a green bond is actually green? What questions should investors be asking?
Well, I think an important aspect here is that the issuer reports on the use of proceeds in due course. So we usually do that after a year from issuance in our annual sustainability bond newsletter, where we actually report on the four green bond principles. What we do there is that we show the nature of the projects we finance. So to give you an example, within FMO, we do a lot of renewable energy projects. So there in the sustainability bond newsletter, we disclose how much of the bond proceeds is allocated towards, for instance, solar energy, wind energy, hydropower, energy efficiency projects, and so on. And so investors know what we basically do with their money. We ask external party opinion. We work a lot with Sustainalytics, that they review the assets or the projects that we finance with our bonds and whether these projects meet the eligibility criteria that we have defined in our sustainability bond frameworks. Our internal green label, so that determines whether an asset is green or not, is being reviewed and verified by our external auditor.
We are waiting for the EU taxonomy to be come into force, which will help provide a common measure for green and social bonds. And I think the market can benefit from a little bit more standardization. The EU, with the large program, 750 billion, will also help bring together some, you know, a sort of standard. And finally, what is also relevant is that we try to look through not only, you know, to the bond, but also to the issuer, try to find some ESG characteristics of the issuer itself. And we find that also helps in assessing whether a bond is dark green or light green. We use some data from various providers to do that. Sometimes the data is, yeah, it's a little bit spotty. It's and then we do some more qualitative analysis into the company if we find the data is not of good enough quality.
What also helps is that standardization of reporting becomes more available via the green bond principles. I encourage issuers to use the standard format to report on your use of proceeds. And so that makes it for investors easier to compare use of proceeds reporting among issuers.
So now all this is very, very relevant for the UK because we're about to see the UK government issue its first green gilt. So I'm interested in your views, Rick and Arthur, about this. But what is the proposal and what you're looking out for? And pension fund trustees listening to this podcast, what should they be investing in this green bond? What should they be looking out for?
I think they should at least have a very close look. I'm for sure going to have a very close look at the bond. And for a couple of reasons. So first of all, it's going to help to bring more transparency to, you know, government spending. I think the bond in itself, I don't know where it's going to be priced, but it could be interesting in itself due to the fact that it's relatively long dated. It's going to be a debut issuance, so they want to attract a large group of investors. And also what we mentioned is it's going to attract different investors than other, you know, investors in gilts, which is both interesting for the DMO, but also for us. Trustees should, you know, carefully consider how much and if they are willing to give up yields for this this purpose. And there's no right or wrong answer to that, or ask their advisors to have a view on that.
Basically, I think the with a lot of sovereign issuance lately, personally, I think the UK cannot stay behind. For every issuer, including the DMO, it's important to look at investor-based diversification. It gives you more options going forward. It also tells you about the strategy the UK has in let's say, greening the economy. I think that is also crucial to take into account the climate agreement. I think it's important that, and you see that happening, that more and more sovereigns start launching green bonds, which means they also actively, in my view, want to green the economy.
And Rick, a final thought from you.
Yeah, so when people approach sustainable investing, they often think about, you know, can I invest directly in solar parks or wind parks or through equity or private equity? And they overlook debt and government bonds, etc., which I think is very logical because the impact may be a little bit more indirect. But pension funds, just by the size of the assets and the portion that's allocated to government bonds, it's just so much money and it can be put to use through these sustainable bonds. So I think it's just by the size, it's very worthwhile in forming a view on it.
My thanks to Rick Klux and Arthur Lachraff for their time, and thank you for listening to this Pensions Expert podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.